You need to pick up some other papers. Okay, but you have to.
Your hours for the next, let's see. Your hours for the next 30 minutes.
You have to listen to them after you.
Oh, my.
Well, I'm gonna make this brief. Here we have an adequate assurance, and of course the timing of this is not the best for Lou Bernstein. However, this is a case which was tried in February of 08, and it dealt with adequate assurance, and there was unrebutted testimony by Mr. Jahelka that the $3 million would be lent to IIT. That is the crucial issue. And again, I recognize Chipleys has made an argument that it's financially unable to pay the $500,000 because it has no assets right now, no liquid assets. Again, I guess would cite to the testimony of Mr. Jahelka, where he testified that 75% of the $3 million was coming from scattered. And I think that's evidence that there was money there to take care and to make the loan. Again, that was in February of 08, and the argument of the financial inability arose in July of 08.
So what exactly is the relationship between Chipleys and Scattered?
They have certain officers. I think Chipleys, the director and officer, has one sole director and officer of Chipleys is Mr. Greenblatt. And I think Scattered, the officer and director is Mr. Jahelka. I think the Chipleys, has a sole shareholder, which is a trust. And Mr. Jahelka and Mr. Greenblatt have been and may still be partners on other entities.
And these are all the principals of the, or former principals of the debtor?
RTC, yes, of the RTC. I've written everything. I have the briefs.
No, you're staying here.
Oh my!
I know.
You serve.
You'll
alcohol.
Bring me before the judicial whatever for imprisonment, I guess. Because really, there are questions.
I understand, Your Honor. I'm just trying to.
I can only think of them. Let's see. You, in the brief, you claimed that Chipleys could demonstrate on remand its ability to lend the trust. And then you said, in quote, something like, except that Chipleys has already funded its obligation, right?
Chipleys has lent to the trust, I believe it was approximately $1.2 million.
So you're not saying that Chipleys already provided the entire $3 million
No, Your Honor.
Needed to cure?
No, Your Honor.
Yeah. Okay. Look, if Chipleys and Scattered failed to loan the necessary funds to IIT and it didn't fulfill its obligations under the contract, what remedy would Allied or Peoria have?
And that's the flaw I have to acknowledge.
That's the fly?
The flaw.
Oh.
I'm acknowledging your point, Your Honor. I'm not arguing with you.
No, I know you.
But again, there's no indication that they wouldn't have done it at the time. I acknowledge your point.
So, basically, all your eggs are in the sufficiency of the evidence basket?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. That's an uphill climb.
I recognize that.
You know, in the brief it said something about IIT being a business trust in part because it has assets susceptible to collection. Specifically, you know, the physical assets that RTC previously
correct, Your Honor.
Gave or assigned, I guess, to Chipley's.
Yes.
What are those?
Those assets? Are the assets.
Like desks?
No, those would be different. The gas methane facilities, that equipment for the different facilities.
So none of them are liquid?
Correct, Your Honor. I acknowledge IIT is not a liquid entity that I can just say here's a checking account and here's $3 million, which is why the testimony was that money needed to be lent in order to make this transaction occur.
What documentation is there to support the claim in the brief that Scattered receives approximately $700,000 in cash monthly from its interest in that oil company? And how much of that is not, you know, isn't earmarked for other expenses?
I don't have an answer, Your Honor, off the top of my head. I'm sorry. I understand there was a testimony and an argument regarding the $750 from H&M. Unfortunately, you know, I was not the trial counsel below, and I recognize in reading all of the briefs and the transcripts that there is a dearth of documentation regarding the financial stability of Scattered and Chipley's. And I'm given the record that's given. As you, I'm given the record that was given to me.
If Allied isn't the counterparty to the three landfill contracts, who do you think is the counterparty with standing?
I think it was the initial party, Your Honor. And it's interesting that Allied spends a great deal of their brief on waiver of the issue. However, they never actually come forth and say there was an assignment, we're the right party, we don't have to write. Again, we as lawyers, we make things more complicated than they need to be. Sometimes we do that to hide things or to obfuscate. They never came forth, could have done it in a paragraph, here's the assignment, we're all done, and that never occurred. So I think it has to go back to the Liberty Waste and ESG, but I think that's my probably longer answer than you needed to your question, Judge.
Is there anything else you would like to say?
No, thank you.
Before we turn the gas on? No. Is there anything?
No. I'm going to stand on the briefs, Your Honor, and I knew this would be a difficult appearance today. So.
But
I'll stand on the briefs. Thank you very much.
Okay. Mr. O'Meara.
May it please the Court, Robert O'Meara on behalf of the Allied appellees. Well, let's just get to the standing argument. I think that Mr. Bernstein raised here at the end of his argument, saying, basically putting the onus on Allied to set forth additional evidence when the Allied standing wasn't challenged below in the appellate briefs. Obviously, that's inappropriate. Had we done so, I'm sure they would have objected to it.
But is there documentation in the record that would demonstrate your ownership of the landfill sites and also your interest in the three contracts with RTC?
There is, Your Honor, although there's not evidence in the record of the actual assignment documents, and that's a failure of IIT's own making. The evidence in the case is that Allied showed up in the bankruptcy case as early as 2000, albeit arguing about other contracts, and since 2005 has always represented itself to be the holder of the three contracts at issue. And these are the Litchfield, Springfield, and Bloomington contracts. That was a representation that was never challenged by anyone. And in fact, the bankruptcy trustee agreed with Allied. He entered into numerous agreed orders with Allied whereby we agreed to extend the time to assume and reject contracts. Even beyond that, and those are cited in our brief, I think there's three or four different agreed orders with the bankruptcy trustee. Following the settlement agreement that gave Scattered the right to designate contracts, which included the Allied contracts, and that Scattered designated that to IIT, in the first motion that the trustee filed to assume and assign the contracts at issue, he listed Allied as the counterparty. That's his April 28, 2006 motion to assume and assign. In that, he attaches two charts. One is a chart of contracts that Scattered is asking him to assume and assign. And Allied's three contracts are listed on there. And in that listing, Allied is reflected as the party to each of them. Similarly, his own motion then attaches, that same motion attaches a chart that came from Scattered, then he attaches his own chart, which says these are the ones I want to move forward on.
So is that what you think is the guarantee we have that Article III standing exists?
Well, Your Honor, I think this is really more of a real party and interest challenge based on what they've done below. But yes, to answer your question, that is some of the guarantee. There's other evidence as well. IIT never objected to Allied standing. Now, they've raised a point in the reply brief, which I can get to in a minute. But following the trustee's motion to assume and assign these contracts, which he listed Allied as the entity of, and as an aside, Rule 6006, I believe, of the Bankruptcy Code puts the onus on the bankruptcy trustee to identify the counterparty to any contracts he wishes to assume and assign, and that was to Allied. Following that, there were numerous orders entered in the case with IIT, trial orders, motions to extend the trial date, and in those, IIT and its counsel, which wasn't Mr. Bernstein, explicitly agreed that it was Allied that was the counterparty to those agreements. There was one joint motion to extend the trial date filed by Mr. Jordan, who was then the counsel, where it listed all three contracts and Allied as the assignee. Probably the most definitive piece of evidence that IIT acquiesced to this, or it certainly caused the problem of a lack of other documentary evidence, is they entered into a stipulation with Allied as to the very cure costs required under these contracts if they got them.
How would you be any worse off than you are now if the trustee is allowed to assume the contracts and assign them to IIT?
Worse off than we are now. The way we are now is that the contracts are terminated. Those rights are now back to my client, who is free to either control them themselves, and these are the rights to collect methane gas from various landfills. I think we're worse off because we now have a right that's valuable to us that's contracted with a party who is, you know, operated, managed, and staffed by the same individuals who owned, operated, and ran RTC for the last 15 years and into a 10-year bankruptcy case. So I think we're significantly worse off. And the standing issue, I think, is really one that IIT has raised at the last minute. There was a brief objection at the trial, a two-sentence objection from the IIT's counsel, where he mentioned there was really no evidence in the record relating to one of the three sites at issue. It never came up again. We stood up and said this has never been an issue, but if it was going to be one, we could bring forth evidence at the trial. Mr. Jordan at trial, IIT's counsel, never raised it again. There wasn't a single witness ever deposed on this. A witness wasn't called. There was never a motion in limine. They filed post-trial motions. They didn't raise it then. So the first time we hear about it is on appeal. I really think it's a real party and interest challenge. They don't claim that the counterparty to these gas contracts lack an interest in defending them. What they're claiming is, we just don't know if it's Allied. And as we cited in our brief, real party and interest challenges can be waived. And I think they've waived it here by not asserting it sooner. Just briefly, I wanted to talk a little bit about the sufficiency of evidence. I think the way Mr. Bernstein is trying to get around the contradiction with the earlier case in this one is by saying Chipley's didn't have any money, but Scattered admitted that it was going to pay 75% of the money. That's actually wrong. I think he's got it reversed, and to his credit, he wasn't at trial. Scattered testified, Andrew Jahelka, the president of Scattered, testified, there was no agreement on who was going to fund what portion of IIT's needs. He said it just hadn't been decided yet. Now, Mr. Greenblatt, the principal of Chipley's, got on the stand and said, oh, no, it's 75% Scattered, 25% Chipley's, but he had to retract that testimony once it was clear that he was wrong. So there was no, or at least the testimony on it was contradicted by both principals, whether there was an agreement to split the cost 75-25. Even if there was an agreement where Scattered was going to fund 75% of this $3 million, Scatter's principal at the time admitted they didn't have the money. They said they hoped to get it soon. They had a building that was for sale, tied up in litigation. He had other debts and expenses, but they didn't have the money. He admitted it at trial. And Judge Weedoff, you know, took the totality of this evidence. We've got two different principals claiming millions of dollars in assets, ready, willing, and able to loan, but not one scrap of evidence was submitted by anybody. Not a bank statement, not a deed, not a balance sheet. And I think rightfully so, he found that evidence lacking. And under the circumstances and reading the totality of his ruling, I don't think it can be said that his ruling was clearly erroneous. And on that, I would rest on our briefs and ask the court to affirm the ruling of the district court and the bankruptcy court. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Kajaka?
Kajaka. May it please the court, Linda Kajaka on behalf of the City and County of Peoria. I'm kind of in an awkward position here because I think the court is well aware of what's going on in this case, and I have set out a roadmap of what happened at trial and why we should be affirmed, but I'm not entirely certain that you want to hear that at this point. I think it's going to come down to whether the allied standing issue and the sufficiency of evidence. What I can discuss, if you'd like to hear it, is, like I said, through the trial.
You came here, and if you want to discuss it, we want to hear it.
Okay. In February 2008, as you know, a trial was conducted by Judge Weedoff in the bankruptcy court to determine whether Illinois Investment Trust 927163, IIT, or the trust, could provide adequate assurance of future performance pursuant to Section 365 of the Bankruptcy Code. The City and County of Peoria had an agreement with the debtor, RTC, which gave RTC the exclusive right to develop and install a landfill gas-to-energy conversion system at a landfill owned by Peoria. The bankruptcy trustee sought to use Section 365 to assume and assign this landfill agreement to the trust. Under Section 365 of the Bankruptcy Code, the trustee was required to provide adequate assurance of future performance under the landfill agreement in order that he could assume and assign it. Adequate assurance is given a practical, pragmatic construction based upon the circumstances of the case. Assurance of future performance is considered adequate if performance is likely, more probable than not. Although adequate assurance does not mean absolute assurance that the contract will be performed, the intention is to afford the non-debtor parties with a measure of protection from having to be saddled with a party that may continue to default and eventually return to bankruptcy. The burden to prove adequate assurance was upon the trustee in this case. During the trial, Peoria and Allied alleged that the trust was an unproven entity which had never operated a gas-to-energy conversion system or a landfill. The trust was run by the same individuals who were responsible for RTC's substandard operations. The trust failed to provide any typical financial indicia, such as balance sheets or bank account statements, in support of its position. The trust based its funding estimates on a series of contingencies, none of which were guaranteed. The trust's financial recovery projections were highly inflated. And the trust did not possess, nor would it likely possess in the near future, valid permits for operation from the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. Also, Judge Weedoff questioned the nature of the trust, whether it was a business or non-business trust, and whether Peoria and Allied would have any recourse should Scattered or Chip Lease fail to fund the trust as promised. These were some of the issues that needed to be addressed at a minimum before the court could determine adequate assurance of future performance. After a two-day trial, Judge Weedoff found that IIT simply failed to bear its burden of proof at trial and show that it could adequately perform under the landfill agreements. Judge Weedoff was upheld to the district court. For one of its bases of appeal, the trust argues that Peoria and Allied sought assurances at trial which exceeded those which were given in the original landfill agreements. This is simply not true. All Peoria sought was assurance that the original agreement could be and would be upheld. It bears noting that while Peoria's original landfill agreement was with RTC, which was a proven corporation, the trust, IIT, had no such track record. At trial, as I said, IIT did not provide adequate financial information, provide balance sheets or financial statements, show a clear availability of funding, or provide that Peoria had recourse should the trust not be funded. As a result of this abject failure of IIT to sustain its burden, Judge Weedoff found that the adequate assurance of future performance was not shown. Judge Weedoff did not rule as he did because the trust was held to a higher standard. In his rulings, Judge Weedoff stated, "What do we have here? We have an entity that's never done business before, that has provided no balance sheet, no income statement, that acknowledges a need to have substantial funds available in the future. And the only evidence that it has that those funds will be available is a contract negotiated with the same people on both sides of the contract and with, as I've just outlined, no ability of the entity who is going to be providing the services to sue for completion of the agreement that's going to provide the financing." Further, the judge acknowledged, "I would have expected, in order to be persuaded of that, to see balance sheets, income statements, and other evidence beyond the oral testimony of the principals of those entities, but that's not the principal problem. The principal problem is that those entities, their principals, Mr. Jahelka and Mr. Greenblatt, could determine at any point that they chose not to fund the loan, and Mr. Connolly would have no effective means of enforcing the obligation. And the counterparties would have even less of an opportunity to enforce the obligation because they are given no rights under any of these agreements." It's clear from Judge Weedoff's comments that not only did he not, he found that there was no adequate assurance of future performance, but he also found that the trust had failed to show its basic ability to operate under the landfill agreements. Further, the judge noted that the trust's failure to provide Peoria and Allied with any recourse, nothing in Judge Weedoff's comments show any requirement that the trust operate above and beyond the original requirements of the landfill agreements. IIT also argues that Judge Weedoff's denial of the assumption and assignment motion should be overturned as the appellant claims that the testimony of its witnesses was unrebutted. The appellant argues that the bankruptcy court did not enter findings of fact and did not explain its rationale for the finding of testimony of the trust witnesses to be incredible. While in many jurisdictions the positive, uncontradicted testimony of a witness is either conclusive upon the trier of fact or may not be disregarded unless certain exceptions are satisfied, there are exceptions to that rule. These include improbable testimony, testimony which is unworthy of belief, suspicious, evasive, impossible, or if the truth or accuracy of the testimony is subject to a reasonable doubt. It is clear from Judge Weedoff's comments throughout and following the two-day trial that his rulings were not based solely on the testimony of one or two witnesses. It is quite clear that Judge Weedoff viewed the evidence as a whole, not in the piecemeal and haphazard fashion the appellant suggests. In conclusion, the trial and post-trial findings and rulings of Judge Weedoff should be upheld. The appellant clearly failed to meet its burden at trial. It failed to produce sufficient evidence to adequately assure future performance of the contract sought to be assumed and assigned. Judge Weedoff correctly ruled the trust did not show sufficient financial ability. The contract for funding was negotiated with the same people on both sides of the contract. There was insufficient evidence to show that the lenders could loan the necessary funds, and that Peoria and Allied had no recourse should the contracts not be upheld. Accordingly, we respectfully request that the appeal be denied and the original bankruptcy rulings be upheld.
Thank you, Ms. Kasheka. Thank you. Mr. Bernstein, do you want to come back?
1 second.
Okay.
The only issue I just wanted to underscore was the jurisdiction issue. And you asked a very direct question to opposing counsel, and you got a very lengthy answer, and he never answered your question, which is, was there anything on the record? And the answer is no, because there is no standing. They never provided the assignment. There was no standing. There was an objection filed in the bankruptcy court by IIT, and that record is clear, and they acknowledge that. So I would just point out that they do not have standing. And I'll rest. The rest is in the briefs.
All right. And now the case is going to be taken under advisement, and everyone can go to the country.